baby, this is what you came for. Lightning strikes every time she moves, and everybody's watching her, but she's looking at you.
This is the Expressive Arts Collective. I'm Sugathir Penn. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and expressive arts therapist. And I'm here with my co-host,
Christian Starnes, licensed marriage and family therapist, working with trauma, archetypal psychology, all the good things.
And we have a fabulous guest today. So excited to have Nancy Wu with us.
Yeah, hi! Yeah, thank you.
Excited to be here.
I'm going to read Nancy's little bio. So Nancy Wu is a poet, community organizer, and 2022 Artist at Work Fellow. She's received fellowships from PEN America, the Arts Council for Long Beach, and Idlewild Writers Week. Her work has been published in The Shore, Topelo, Quarterly, Stirring, Radar Poetry, and other journals and anthologies. Nancy has an MFA in Creative Writing Poetry from Antioch University and a BA in Sociology from UC Santa Cruz. Her work is largely inspired by the magic and power of the natural world. Welcome, Nancy.
Thanks, Sue. Hi, Christian. Thanks for having me.
Is there anything else you want to say to introduce yourself? I mean, that's a fabulous bio, but anything else you want to say?
Well, since that bio has been printed, I have been awarded the 2023 California Creative Corps Grant from the California Arts Council.
Woo! Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. And that just happened recently, right?
Recently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what are you going to be doing with that?
So, the program is designed to pair an artist with a nonprofit to build topical focused community programming, like basically public awareness around COVID, climate, etc. So I'm going to be working with a nonprofit called Distill Arts, D-S-T-L Arts, and what they do is they offer professional development and mentorship to writers from underserved communities. So I will be mentoring a couple writers with them, and I will also be working with them to put together a transportation-focused zine that is going to be compiling material from community workshops that some of the interns will be building, and I'll be helping to direct that project.
Well, gosh, it sounds so exciting. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
It's so cool. Mm-hmm. And you've done work like that in the past, right? You've held workshops and been a mentor for other folks in the past?
Yeah, actually the 2022 program I was in, Artists at Work, was a very similar program with an artist being paired with a nonprofit to do community programming. And I will tell you what's very exciting is I think that I'm noticing a trend, because 2 years in a row I've gotten two similar programs fully funded. So I think there's this energy, especially if you're coming out of COVID, of like, we need to not be isolated. We need to be connecting with each other. I mean, our mental health suffered during that time. And I think a lot of people realize, and by people, in this case, I mean funders, big funders of the arts, realize that how much artists can do to help bring communities together. And that's a big part of what I do is because I believe in the power of the arts to bring people together. And I've done lots of workshops, lots of teaching, but you know, I'm not going to give you my whole CV right now.
Well, I know that you've been hard at work working in the community, bringing the power of the arts to the community.
Yeah, I've done reading series at the Long Beach Public Library, at Deep Piazza's, and done workshops with the library. The Long Beach Public Library is amazing, by the way. I'm lucky to have partnered with a lot of really cool people.
Yeah, and you just had your new book release on Sunday.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. So yeah, I celebrated my book release, my first book of poems, I'd Rather Be Lightning, put up by Gasher Press earlier this year. And I...
Gorgeous cover. Gorgeous cover.
Thank you. I'm very happy with the cover. And the publisher... This is actually the first round of books that the publisher is publishing, and I'm just so fortunate to be working with a publisher who's just really amazing. So, where was I going with that?
Your new work that was coming out.
Yeah, new work.
Celebrating new
one.
Thanks. Sunday was my book launch at Wrigley Coffee, which is a really special place here in Long Beach. It's actually a nonprofit too. I don't know if you guys know. It's partnered with a nonprofit called Family Promise at the South Bay, and they actually support parents who are facing housing insecurity.
Cool, nice.
Yeah, so I mean, a big part of my event on Sunday was working in the community, because the community, and I mean community in like a few different communities, but my communities are what have buoyed me through the turbulent process of writing this book over many years.
Yeah, I imagine it's not easy, to write and to figure out which pieces you want to add or which pieces to lovingly release, let go of,
absolutely.
I imagine it's quite the process.
Yeah, so in writing this book, I actually went back into my archives for the last few years, since I would say 2014, and I pulled out 300 poems that I'd written.
Wow.
And I was like, all right, here's my mess. What do I do? And then I went in and I was like, all right, abandon that one. This one maybe. This one's good.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to take stock of all of my work because I am such a wide variety writer. I write about lots of different things. So I was trying to find my thread. What am I really going to dive into?
Mm-hmm.
And so after that process, I was writing new material. And at that time, this was about 2021, I was in my MFA program. We were in the heart of COVID.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing my grad program, my MFA online. And I was watching a lot of nature documentaries about how humans are destroying the planet. And
it's a thing.
So I like to say one of my hobbies was just weeping.
I can so relate to that.
Oh, you like writing too?
I do. I need to incorporate writing though. But I do. Yes.
I cried like earlier today. Like I've been crying like a lot. But, like happy cries recently.
Those ones are good.
Gratitude cries.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, all of these people that I know, and so many of them came
emotions,
out someday.
Yes. Lots of energy.
Yes.
Yeah, and you were saying, like, you were in that isolation writing. Yeah, talking to that, and then, like, I'm curious about how did you stay motivated? And I mean, like, we got our own life stressors, but especially with, this was a collective trauma for the world. And unfortunately, people don't know about that collective trauma and how all of this does carry over, but... having to write, be in school during COVID, I find it so overwhelming to sit down and write things as it is. I've got the fear of like, am I going to do it wrong? Is it, do you have any like tricks or how does your process go?
Oh my gosh.
Great question. This is a wonderful question.
That's so rich. I can just like dive into it. Can I give you like all the tools, the tools I've learned over the years? Because yes, it's scary sitting down to write, and what I call the critic comes in sometimes too early. We need the critic later on down the road when we're like, oh, let's think about, should I, edit this way? But first sitting down to write, I have to lovingly set a boundary with my critic.
Yes.
And say, critic, right now is not the time. What I need right now is the muse.
Mm.
So I open the door to the muse when I sit down to write, and that is a cultivation that's taken me like 10 years. I actually like to say, like, I think to myself, who do I have to be to write the poem that I want to write? So I think a lot about my state of being, where my mental health is, where I'm at. But anyway, pausing the critic and inviting the muses, just one of the kind of mental tricks we can do when we sit down to, we need to get the words on the page first.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of my workshops, so I ran a poetry workshop called Surprise the Line, and I like to recite a mantra to everyone before we begin, and it goes something along the lines of, I'm settling in to write, what I'm going to write today is what I'm meant to write, I'm not judging myself or my writing, I'm just writing, and, you know, I'm ready to begin. And so just tricking our brains. We need to trick our brains all the time.
Yeah, I always say, like, it's like that's an old episode of The Twilight Zone with Burgess Meredith. Google him, kids. I know, they did a reboot, and so they might have redone some of these episodes, but he's the last man on Earth. He loves to read. He's very introverted. He works at a bank. He's in the vault. All of a sudden, he gets locked in the vault. He's like, oh no, wait, somebody let me out. Well, something happens. The door opens, and he is literally the last person, the only person on the Earth. And so he's wandering around trying to find people, and he's getting sad about it. He's like, comes to the conclusion, I'm all alone. And he looks and sees a library. Oh, and he's so happy and so grateful. And he starts to run towards the library. And don't you know it, he trips, falls, and his glasses fall off. And he can't see to read.
No.
And that pops into my mind when I think about our brains and our bodies. Because, oh, what the great mechanisms we have. These are so great, but they don't come with, you know, owner's manuals. And so we're just going, oh, this must be how this goes. Oh, this must be how it goes. But every individual person is believing, oh, this is how reality goes because this is mine. But it's not. You can manipulate in a positive way. There's a different phrase for that that someone said recently, and I don't remember, but that's what I got. But, it, you know, manipulation isn't inherently negative. We're just transforming.
Absolutely.
But with the brain, you can. And repetition. Mm. Repetition gets us one place. Repetition will get you another place. So everything that you're saying is completely sound and awesome.
I like the idea of inviting the muse in. I heard, I think it may have been Liz Gilbert. Oh, maybe it was Liz Gilbert in Big Magic, you know that book?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where she talks about meeting her muse and like all the like almost like silly little rituals she would do in order to invite her muse in, like literally dress up to write.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that comes to me. It's like, oh, yeah. So do you do any fun little rituals like that to invite? I mean, you've got your mantra, but do you do any, like, things that from the outside it might look a little silly, but to you it's, like, super important to get you in this space to write?
I like to light a candle as my ritual signifier. Like, I'm entering into my sacred space, my deep space. I honestly use a lot of tools outside of my writing time. So when I think about who I have to be to write the poems I want to write, I think about how am I living my life. So actually a lot of my tools come in outside of when I'm sitting down at my desk, because I actually think that as a writer, I'm always writing. Like, I'm always observing, I'm always thinking, I'm always feeling, and I have a practice now of taking notes wherever I go. If something, if a line strikes me, I'm like, gotta catch it now or else it's gone forever. So I take notes as I go. I mean, so in that way, I guess you could say I've cultivated a state of like creative openness throughout my daily life. And then it makes it easier when I sit down to write, the channel's already open. And that's, I mean, lots of mental health tools I have used to be able to feel like I'm in that creative space, just going through my daily life and appreciating the things around me.
Gives me very DBT vibes.
What vibes?
DBT, dialectical behavioral vibes of like practicing mindfulness throughout your day. What are some other, like interpersonal skills? What's the other one? Mindfulness, interpersonal skills, and emotional regulation.
Emotional regulation. And
you
then,
know?
Yeah.
And like using those tools throughout your day so that when you do go to sit to write, you're like available to yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, and another tool is when you sit down to write, do a brain dump. Just set a timer for even just 2 minutes and just write down everything that's worrying you, your grocery list, your things to do, whatever. Just, and then you clear a little bit of space for the muse.
I think Anne Wellman does that too in her writing classes.
Ann Wellman, the director of the Long Beach Community Theater, who also does writing workshops.
Mm-hmm.
I think she starts her workshops like that too.
Brain dumps.
Brain dumps.
Yes.
Yeah, it, you know, and I got my clinical psychology degree from Antioch.
No way.
Yeah, and so I know that their whole mission as a university, you know, about the boots on the ground for the revolution.
Yes.
And social justice, yes, and mental health and creativity coming together. Do you feel, and I wasn't in the creative writing program, but I kind of feel like all of it kind of mixed into one in a lot of ways, because my professors are, you know, working therapists there, were a lot of them former artists, actors in TV and things like that. Did you find that, because the way you're speaking, I'm like, ooh, there's a lot of like real holistic principles that you use. Was that always your jam? Or, you know, and like, is there anybody in your life prior that inspired you to start writing and kind of see it as this full part of self? And then kind of leading in even to the education part, because there's so many places out there offering, you know, degrees, but you gotta find the place that speaks to your soul. You know, because we can learn all the information, but if you don't know how to walk and talk at the same time to integrate it. And so I feel, knowing Antioch University, they're so integrative. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
How did this start? Where did this come from? Has this always been?
Yeah.
I'm using my hands a lot today. Whimsical.
I know. If only y'all could be in the studio with us. Christian's over here almost like dancing.
I'm a tail in the wind.
We have a great question.
Well, I do feel like the psychology department and the MFA program at Antioch were pretty intertwined, because...
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I'll tell you the one thing that was one of the things that when I got to my first orientation at Antioch, residency, we call them, I knew I was in the right place, because we started with an opening circle. So rather than like actually I shouldn't have used the word orientation. They didn't give us an orientation where the person was telling us how things are going to go. We had an opening circle.
Yes.
You know, a circle of us sharing who we were, and you know, I love circles, facilitating circles. I'm sure you guys do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Love it.
Circles,
yeah. Love.
So we had a circle. I was like, oh, wow, amazing. And then during residency, which is a whole lot of amazing, brilliant speakers and writers coming and sharing lectures with us, it can be really overwhelming. I can get overwhelmed from time to time. And they had set up a rest room with yoga mats and low lighting and Himalayan soul lamps.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, these are my people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You need to go in here and decompress before the next lecture. And I will say, I mean, all of that was amazing. And a big part of my experience was the chair of the MFA department at the time, Victoria Chang, who was my mentor from my Emerging Voices Fellowship, and she's just an incredible poet and an incredible human, swiftly making changes everywhere she goes.
Mm.
And so anyway, I got to see sort of the MFA program evolve even towards more LGBTQ justice and racial justice and economic justice. I mean, she created scholarships while I was there, some of which I'm the recipient of, which I'm very grateful.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Antioch is a wonderful place, and I was drawn there because of the social justice orientation, and I've always, that has been a part of my work always. Mm-hmm. So ever since my undergrad in sociology at UC Santa Cruz, I've been trying to figure out ways of integrating arts and social justice, mm-hmm. like, basically, you know, yes, for all the times.
For all the times. I get that.
Yeah, and so it is an interesting intersection of arts and activism. Going back to my book launch, I was able to bring on a few really amazing poets and also bring on some community organizers and activists who are working to change our policies at the city, local level, and you know, really amazing people who are trying to fight, you know, the oil drilling. Signal Petroleum wants to have a 20-year extension with to build 46 new oil wells. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, we're like, wait, we actually want to go the opposite direction. So we had some people speaking on that. So anyway, the intersection of arts and activism is just where my heart is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you are a big passionate about environmentalism, and I have a question for you. Could you share a poem from your book that reflects your passion for environmentalism and the interconnectedness of nature and human experience?
Ooh. Yes, I would be happy to. And I am recently obsessed with this genre of poetry called eco-poetry. So eco-poetry is a specific sort of genre that is not quite nature poetry. If you think about nature poetry, you go out into the woods and you write about the birds. And
yes, don't get me wrong. I go into the woods and I write about
birds. I was going to say, you strike me as a person who does and some. You're a nature go-getter.
So there's like nature poetry, but then eco-poetry specifically considers the complicated human relationship to nature.
That's what I was thinking, because there's eco-psychology as well. And it's kind of like it feels like a branch off of like a systematic ecology and ecosystem. Yeah, you know. Yeah. Do speak more.
Yeah. So I guess before I read the poem, I will talk about eco poetry because I really like it. So it is ecosystems. You know, I think a lot of our Western ideas about nature are that humans are separate from nature. We have the places where humans are, and then we have this pristine wilderness, and then the spaces in between. But I think that eco-poetry definitively acknowledges the human presence on the earth. Yeah. You know, that we are in the Anthropocene. We are the dominant species, capitalizing on Earth's resources. And then how does that influence somebody writing about nature? So that's kind of where my perspective is coming from. Like all the systems, everything is political, right? And so we have our political systems, people who make decisions about what happens to natural resources or to people, you know, in the environmental justice, that's a big thing as well. Like what are the communities of color and the working class communities that, you know, suffer the brunt of pollution, especially even here in Long Beach. Mm-hmm. In Long Beach, we can talk about that. So eco-poetry, I'm reading a lot about it right now, but I'd say, you know, goes back to like the 90s, kind of like after the burgeoning environmental awareness of the 60s, poets started really writing about the existential crisis of our presence on the earth. So that's a lot of what I read about.
Juicy, I can't wait.
Okay, so I can read this one called Naysaying the Noise. I haven't found one thing the stars aren't a cure for. Hand me my mountain bag full of ripe plums plummeting from flower bud to boiling pot to jam jar. I count the miles back out to Chaparral, heaving under the weight of my need to see everything and to be seen seeing it. Would I feel less wanderlust if I could scrub off the dead glory of a nation obsessed with itself? Follow me to a hot spring tucked away behind some tall grass. Would you like that? I accelerate out to the wilderness, forgetting what I'm supposed to be forgetting. To get absolutely lost in the ridiculous brilliance of an acorn. I have everything I could ever want. And still, I wonder how far humanity will go for a profit. Whether we will ever find another home like this one. It's miraculous blue. It's hilarious oxygen. Every cat meme is a metaphor for the existential threat du jour. Somewhere, a teenage girl thinks her ears are too big. And the hawking jays but I wouldn't even call song. I want to give them to you. Their pointy heads and blue breasts flashing. What illusion am I breaking when I say no to the noise? No, I won't entertain hatred. Refuse to listen to vitriolic propaganda. No black bear, no bobcat, no oriole, no waxing moon understands.
Mm.
Love it. Love it. Mm-hmm. And I do want to follow you to that hot tub.
Hot springs. Oh my gosh, hot springs are the best place on earth. I hope every single human on the planet gets to go to a hot spring. Like a natural hot spring.
Yeah, I have not.
It's just like out in the wild. Not like a hot tub resort where they like, you know, have the water in tubs for you, but like, you're talking about
those
like,
are good too.
You know, like natural, like out in the wilderness.
Real natural hot spring is one of the most magical things in the world. I mean, I love baths though.
Like, me too.
So if you like baths, you'll probably like the hot spring.
Right.
I've never been to a natural hot spring.
Me neither. I've never seen one. I've never seen a waterfall even. I know.
There are waterfalls here in LA. We have to fix that.
I know. There's so many things. I need to be a part of nature. Because that's the thing that, like, where I come from and how I was brought up in, like, the 80s and 90s is everything is so separate. And how people say, that's the irony of, and it's difficult talking about all these things from mental health to creativity, because it's like, where does it, one thing start and the other thing end? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't.
Right.
And that's kind of the paradox of everything. We, and even just when you mentioned about going to hot springs, like at a resort, and I've been to something like that, and it's like, no, in nature. And as you mentioned, like, you know, we, with eco-poetry and all these, it's a system. It's a ecology, or what is it called when there's an eco, it's a damn ecosystem. Oh God, I'm like, there's a word in there, and I've broken it up. Ah, how Freudian of me, both separate, but it's together. And here we do this replication of the real natural world in this separate world that also the fragmentation of that creates such disorder.
Oh my gosh, kind of cognitive dissonance. Oh, don't even get me started.
I was like, what is that word? Cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Because we live in a manufactured human world, but I'm looking at trees outside the window, but those aren't probably native trees. They're trees that Europeans brought here, I mean, going back to the beginning, mm-hmm. right? That people brought over here, and now we accept that as natural or part of what our societies are. But I'm also thinking a lot about what about the indigenous presence on these lands, and you know, going back to this idea of the pristine wilderness, you know, there have been humans living holistically within nature, you know, everywhere all the time throughout history. And it was, you know, this European thought that there was a hierarchy to nature, that you've got Pico della Mirandola is the philosopher I remember learning this about. You've got God at the top, then you've got your priests, then you've got your kings, and then you've got, you know, your the other men, and then you've got women, and then you've got domestic animals, and then you've got wild animals, and then you've got plants, and then you've got algae and fungi. Like, he laid it out. Like, this is the hierarchy of nature. And that's a false hierarchy, you know? I mean, even getting away from hierarchical thinking, I mean, that's the patriarchal thinking right there. Men above women. And so ecofeminism is a big part of my work as well, which is drawing comparisons between the way that historically, you know, patriarchy has limited women and in the same way, you know, capitalism has destroying and dominating the earth. Domination, that's the word I was looking for. Men dominating women, you know, humans dominating the earth.
Yeah.
It's a system of one is better than the other, and that goes into all these other social systems we're talking about, racial systems, you know, all of these different types of social systems we create, and going, you know, to we are nature, we are all nature. how can we switch that hierarchical binary thinking into a more holistic way of seeing things? And like you're saying, they're all related. Mental health, nature, writing, creativity. A big part of this book was actually me finding some solace for a lot of the anxiety and depression I was going through in nature. Mm-hmm. So nature became my avenue towards wellness. And I believe that humans, many of us, miss a connection to a wild sense, a sense of wildness, a sense of nature. A lot of us don't get that every day. It's not built into the fabric of our society, which is a big thing that I would love to, help shift and help change so that we can create that connection in nature, because nature is so good for mental health. Like, I truly believe, like, touching the grass, like they say, touch grass, like, is just, it's been so huge for me.
Yeah, and there's research that shows that taking your shoes off and putting your feet in grass really does change, like, the brain waves.
Yeah.
You know?
And physiologically, my nervous system is different after I walk myself to the lagoon than when I came.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe you know more about this, but like forest bathing, that there's something about the vibes of trees that changes our physiological vibration. Do you know more about that? Do you know anything about that? Do you know about that?
Yes, and I can't remember what it's called. And a friend of mine introduced me to it comes out of Eastern philosophy, China or Japan, where they have a phrase for it. And what they found is there's some sort of chemical that trees give off that does affect mammals. And it changes, like, it can affect and change around, like, the dopamine, serotonin. Mm-hmm. So I always tell clients, I hit both parts. I try, and I'm like, look, go to nature, get out, it's helpful. It's also, the expansionist of it. Mm-hmm. And I share. And if you really feel like, going, well, I'm depressed, go outside, sounds really dismissive in our culture because it's been thrown around without any context. So I'll tell people, I want you to go outside, but here's why.
Like, here's the science
behind it. Here's the science behind it. So if you're feeling some kind of way, it's hard. It feels like you're dragging yourself. To me, it's nice to know, okay, if I do this thing a couple times this week, something is going to change and happen. And it makes it so much easier. It's like, that's the paradox. You have to have, and I hear it with when you're speaking, you have such creativity, openness, and then there's also the ignition, the catalyst is intention. And I think a lot of times artists and people that are struggling with mental health separate the two. It becomes dichotomized. Mm-hmm. Well, I gotta get my creative juices flowing. Here we go. I'm sitting here with all my stuff. Okay. It should just come as if someone or something inside of me is just going to rescue me and happen. And it's like, no, intention. And sometimes it will be, I feel like shit. And I'm just going to do one simple thing. I'm going to take my shoes off and stand where I am outside in the yard. Okay. I'm going to walk from here to Ralph's and acknowledge that I'm looking at trees and taking in the air. There's something about this. Okay, I can trust that. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to call upon the muse and actively, intentionally be compassionate, but go, hey there, critic. Hey there, homeboy. You got to stay over here a little bit. Okay, we'll come back to you because we need you later. They're just so excited. The critic, ooh, 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 me first. It's like, wrong time, Dad.
Exactly.
It's like, stay swept. Wait for the cue. What's the cue? I put the pencil down. Okay. And we have to have the variety. And I think that's the balance. We go too far with, I gotta do yoga at 7 p.m. I gotta get up at 8. I gotta do this, and then I gotta make sure I eat at this time. And we leave out the flow of just existing, which is where you can be creative and open. And if we live too much in creative and open, which I love.
We love to be creative and open.
Then a lot of times I feel like not only does do things not get done, but more importantly, there's this slippage unconsciously into this sense of the world and the universe and everyone is against me. And if I just become more open, things are going to come my way and change when it takes two parts. You got to put gas in the car and then you got to put your foot on the pedal.
Exactly.
Picking up on putting down?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel you with the flow, with the intention, with the manifestation, with the balance, all of it. It's a big part of the writer's life.
Yeah, and letting all of that in, and then noticing probably when you have to go, okay, that's enough for now. Just like in mental health. Mm-hmm. As an actor, that's really difficult. How do I compartmentalize a truthful emotional experience under imaginary circumstances when, like, I remember playing someone that was very mean and violent towards kids, very narcissistic, and it was easy to kind of open that gateway intellectually and emotionally. I was like, this makes sense, okay. But then when it was done, it was just a gloomy play. It was really hard to let it go. So I actually was working with a guy named Paul Kalina, who was part of 300 Clowns in Chicago, one of the creators of that. Check him out. That stuff is so fucking cool. They did crazy shit. And he suggested just drive across, you know, like in Chicago, he'd drive across the road, Lake Michigan there, and picture all the gunk going out, just going out into the universe, and he's taking in the energy of like the ocean.
Oh my gosh, I do that every day.
Yeah.
Literally, I throw my worries into the lake, and I allow myself to be recharged by the sun and the trees and the ducks, and just going out there has been the singular, I use a lot of mental health tools. I think this might be the most beneficial thing for me. It's going up, I say if I can get myself to the lagoon, if I live about a mile away, if I can get myself to the lagoon, I can do anything. Because once I get there, I know that I'm going to be changed. And it does take repetition, like you said, anything, practice over and over again. I had to actually train myself to go and learn how to be rejuvenated and actually allow myself to be rejuvenated, because we put so much, or I put so much pressure on myself with so many thoughts. Oh my gosh, I mean, with all the intrusive thoughts.
Oh my gosh,
little tape recorder in there.
It takes up a lot of space. I mean, talking about room for the muse to enter, I feel like I have to clear out a lot of what's bogging me down, my doubts, my fears, oh my gosh, what are people gonna think of me? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, whatever it is that's going on that day. And yeah, I open myself up to being helped by it's spiritual for me too, so I also have the training to hand it over to a higher power. You know, for me, nature and community are my two primary higher powers. And then I realize it's not all up to me. I don't have to figure everything out, you know?
Right.
What a relief.
Yeah.
a friend sent me what it is. It is referred to as forest bathing. There is boom, boom, and it's something about like chemicals given off, and I don't know how to enunciate this, but it looks like Shinrin Yoku is what it may be called. But if you Google forest bathing, you'll find out more about these chemicals that give off, what it does to mammals. I see why animals like to chill in the forest.
Yeah.
Thought that's just where the food is. Not all the time. Maybe they're like, I'm comfy in here.
That's where the vibes
are. I'm vibing. Right?
Forest vibes.
Yeah. Forest vibes. So take yourself into nature, be one with the sun, throw up all your gunk into the ocean and the river, and go about your day. Get a latte at, what was that place called?
Wrigley Coffee.
Yes. Yeah. All the things.
Yeah. So you were talking about Colorado
Lagoon,
mm-hmm.
and you have a poem
mm-hmm.
called The Colorado School.
I do.
Would you be willing to read that for
sure.
us?
Sure. And since I wrote this poem, I've actually written so many Lagoon poems, so this is funny because this is just the first Lagoon poem I've written. Okay.
The first of many.
The first of many. So this is Colorado Lagoon, after the wonderful poet Mary Oliver. And I wrote this, again, right in the middle of COVID. I pass a few early morning walkers, silent nod. Small purple flowers greet me as I approach the lagoon. Golden retriever gallops along a small curve of sand. An egret stands on one leg under the mossy bridge as a pair of ducks glides by. One flaps, gains speed, and flies over the dock. The other floats under. A fish splashes out of the water to catch flies. The park is clean, no debris. I glance at my screen, murky with Americans protesting science, sweaty mouths spitting. I throw grief into the current. One part of the story is algae. Another part follows me home like a shadow. My throat closing, then opening. The geese know when to fly, land, rest, and when it's time to honk like all hell, stretching an alarm across the sky.
Grief into it.
Yeah.
Is it for the grief into the river?
Grief into whichever water body you prefer.
Got a cup of water in my house. It's the only place I can get to. I'm giving it to you. Giving it to you. You know, just, I'm just trying to improvise, make things happen. No, you know, like, it at my house.
That's the thing. People mm-hmm. put water out to absorb negativity.
Yes,
in their
I was
space.
Actually gonna say in the witch community.
Everything's connected. Right, Carrie.
Yeah, don't mind us. I have to
Sorry.
Break out into song.
I forget where I am sometimes.
Okay, so here's another question for you, going back to the mental health
mm-hmm.
piece. So mental health issues are often stigmatized or misunderstood. How do you hope your poetry contributes to a broader conversation about these topics and helps reduce stigma?
Yeah, so specifically my book approaches the topic of eco-anxiety and climate distress.
No, eat your book. absorb your book.
Yeah, and I wrote it during a time when I was going through it. So this was, you know, my coping mechanism to get through it. And I hope that if people read it, they can feel that they're not alone in experiencing the anxiety and distress over the state of the world. I mean, choose a thing, you know, yeah. Florida, like.
I like that we named a whole state, and I completely was like, yeah. And that's unfortunate. That's another topic for another day.
Yeah, another day.
But yes.
Like, yeah, whatever's Florida. Going on, whatever is mm-hmm. like, you know, oh my gosh, this thing is happening in the world, and I feel a way about it, and what do I do with myself?
Mm-hmm.
I hope that people reading as a reader would take, just that someone else is going through that with you. And I like to help people write through it too, because like we mentioned, writing can be a tool for helping us get through those times.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. I was thinking about earlier, about Maslow's needs.
Yeah,
the hierarchy of needs, mm-hmm. right? And when it feels like our world is falling apart and closing in and it's all overwhelming, it's difficult to think about having time and space to sit down and be creative when it feels like everything is on fire around us, mm-hmm. you know? But I think that the more that we can, you know, put the critic and maybe the anxiety outside the door for an afternoon and sit with our muse and invite that creativity, that's, I think, where we can begin to cultivate some of that balance.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And I think that, for me, writing poetry can be a very therapeutic thing to do. Mm-hmm. Poetry is great because it's an art, so you can break the rules and you don't have to follow, you don't have to worry about grammar or anything like that, syntax. In fact, poetry often disrupts your expected grammar and syntax. So it's fun to for me, it's fun to play. So it gives kind of two things, an outlet for emotions and feelings, because also poetry doesn't have to be linear or truthful, you know, it doesn't have to be biographical, it could be anything. Yeah. It could be, oh, I feel, you know, you can translate your feelings into images, because, you know, poetry comes from that, for me, that wordless space of sensation and living and observation, whatever it is that we are as our consciousness inside our bodies, before language. Poetry can help us, I think, translate that into something that can be universally understood. Like, I feel like a tree, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to throw my grief into the river. Yeah. That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. I do actually, it's funny you mentioned I feel like a tree, but I do, that was introduced to me from a good old Jonathan, mentioned him, I think, on the first episode. My first therapist was a Buddhist contemplative psychologist, and he threw down the, the tarot cards?
Yeah.
The Mexican...
Loteria?
Yes, thank you, Loteria. Yeah, I'm from Flint, Michigan.
okay.
thank you for pronouncing things. And threw them down on the floor and said, okay, just pick up two and let's see, you know, and then you can do the same thing with also tarot cards or any other sort of
art cards, architect cards,
yeah,
all the cards.
Because you will get inspiration. And a lot of people do this also when they're creating, you know, writing or movies or whatever they're doing. And one of it was like Atlas with the weight of the world on his shoulders, and the other one was a tree. And it's why I got this tattoo with these trees.
Oh, beautiful.
And our sense was I was carrying around this feeling of the weight of the world on my shoulder, all the worries about being queer and am I trans? I don't know. And trauma and stuff. And he was so chill. He was like Splinter from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but way younger. He was just like, hello, I'm here too. Like, mix it with Kermit the Frog. Anyways. And he goes, looks at the other card. He's like, weigh the world, the shoulders, and the tree. When he goes, think like a tree. What's a tree? And I was like, I was new in therapy, so I was like, I don't know, tell me. Well, I'll do it. Like, you know. Hashtag codependent.
Classic.
And he was like, well, what comes to mind when you think of a tree? Like, and I was like, tough. Grounded, rooted, extends outward, strong, but when the wind comes, it just moves with it, doesn't break. Sure, a big storm comes, but also, oftentimes seeds fall down and then it regrows. So I still do that, where when I'm feeling anxious or uncomfortable, I'll go think like a tree. And I mentioned that at the time to other friends of mine in the MFA acting program, and they started doing it too. And I could hear them whisper at times to themselves, think like a tree.
Yeah.
And I share it with clients because it those images. And again, we disassociate from what's around us and miss it. So I got inspired with the tree and
yeah,
all of the above, like just everything you're saying, it. I'm just like, whoa, there's so much.
And it, so I too have in therapy, my therapist told me to think like a tree.
Really?
Yeah, my favorite Jungian therapist that was the one that introduced me to expressive arts therapy, brought in a lot of like movement and sand tray and visual art and poetry. I was telling Nancy earlier that I had this therapist who would often open or close our sessions with poetry, or if I had nothing to talk about, she'd like just randomly open a poetry book and read the poem, and then we take inspiration from that.
He's very Jungian as
well. Anyway, so that therapist also told me to think like a tree, and we did a somatic exercise where I got up and really like embodied a tree and like felt my feet very grounded, and then moved my arms like, you know, like I was in a hurricane or tornado, but like my feet are very grounded and solid, so like I'm flexible. I can move with you know, the hard stuff in life that feels very chaotic, and I don't have to move with it.
Yeah.
I don't have to be swept away by it. And it was really powerful, and I still think about it sometimes.
Yeah.
When shit is really hitting the fan, I am a tree.
He photocopied it for me that day, and this was 2010, early 2010. You go to my office, everywhere I've lived since, it's tacked up on the wall.
Hmm.
And now it's framed, because I thought that's probably a good idea.
Hmm.
But yeah.
I also have a painting of a tree in my office.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I picked it, you know, unconsciously, and that's what why I selected it.
Yeah. Images.
Yeah, and
all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so even just the image tree can evoke so much, right? It allows us a way in rather than saying like, you know, oh, depression, right? Like,
yeah.
Like it allows us a way to talk about it that, you know, might be a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to say too, the tree thing, there's this hypothesis called the biophilia hypothesis, which is the idea that humans are drawn to nature, and we are meant to be in nature, and that when we're not in it, we're missing something. I just want to throw that out there.
It makes sense. We're biodegradable. I mean, come on.
And like with your the tree with the roots, oh my gosh, that makes me think so many things. Like, you know, these ecosystems that we're talking about, like underneath the tree, the roots are communicating with each other and with the fungi and the mycelium that are down there. You know, mycelium transfers messages from tree to tree.
What's mycelium?
Mycelium is,
I've heard it, but I'm not sure. I hope it's a rice, because it sounds delicious.
It's actually the, fungi.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like mushroom systems. Mushrooms, by the way, oh my gosh. Mushrooms are, I believe, mushrooms are like the origin of life. There's this amazing documentary, Fantastic Fungi, that everybody needs to watch. But mushrooms are so important to the ecosystem, mycelium, that we don't see all the time because they're underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about mental health,
there's
so much underneath the surface that we're not seeing that is so important to what happens above the surface. So like with roots, it makes me think of the chakra system, the root chakra, which is the first chakra, which is associated with the unconscious. So it's the unconscious mind that stores the things that we don't, you know, we don't always think about, but that influence us. Like, oh, that memory from childhood that I'm not thinking about that's making me feel this, made me react in a certain way because of the neural pathways that have been paved in this direction. And then above that, you have the sacral, which is the flow and going into water. And, you know, we need all the elements. So the chakra system teaches me that we are nature. Once again, coming back to we are nature.
Yeah.
Earth, air, water, fire. And so those roots are so important. That's the place that we start in chakra healing, is going into the unconscious and seeing how do we access those things that are down there. And then the sacral is the subconscious, and then the solar plexus is the conscious. So we think about moving up these ladders of consciousness, and there's different energetic properties associated with each one. So that's really helped me actually a lot in conceptualizing my own mental health and spiritual health, is like, they're all interacting in a system holistically together.
And finding it's, I think it's like in so many different, we see it in our media, or in our stories, or in our poetry, of these doors of perception, and these, we talk about dimensions and things. It's all about finding a way in, and I think most people love a quick way in. So, like, with a tree image, or going and imagining also the chakra system, you know, what is exploded, imploded, is it spinning right? You can visualize this, and your body will respond in ways that you'll feel. And that's the kind of where we started a little bit with the unlocking the roadmap of your body, which your mind is a part of, you know, but it's like, yeah, unlocking that and finding ways in. And I think that's where also creativity comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
And using the right side of the brain, we're getting to imagery, color, texture, storytelling,
and
symbols.
The binary of, you're not a child anymore. You must put away these games. And it's like, they're not playing games. If children are actually showing you the inside of their experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's super cool. And we all have ways to tap back into that. And I think you listed a lot of them, you know?
And what you mentioned earlier about that sometimes it might be easier to talk about something by using the tree imagery,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like an easier way in because talking directly about something could either be really scary, or we don't even know the mushrooms in our lives.
Yeah.
We don't even know. So until we tap into the creative side where we can use this imagery, you know, I think that's a great way in to figure out what are our mushrooms that are underneath the surface that are influencing our life. Jung had a great quote about something, Chris, maybe help me out, about like, until you know your unconscious material, it will lead your life and you'll call it fate.
Yeah, it was something to that effect. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the funny thing of, it makes me think about like, you know, unfortunately, Harry Potter was always my useful analogy, but it's so riddled with yuckiness now. Mm-hmm. But I'll just say, let's say hundreds and thousands of years from now, if humans haven't literally, we're the only species putting ourselves into extinction. So if we're still around, someone's going to find in the rubble a Harry Potter book and go, this is how they lived. This is how it was. They all had owls, they had all these things, you know, and they're like, okay. And it kind of reminds me of that, even though it's not literally like subconscious material from the person, but it's the same thing, inside out, outside in, and call it fate.
Mm-hmm.
When getting to know yourself, getting to know others, getting to know the world around you is always kind of the first place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it makes me think of a time I was teaching poetry to fifth graders, and just had the power of image and emotion. There was this one young boy who acted out the first day of class, and so his teacher separated him from our poetry class, and he only got to visit like maybe a couple more times, but he was there one day and he wrote this incredible poem about the color red, and it was just so full of emotion. And I find out later he has a really difficult home life. Both of his parents are struggling with addiction, and his, you know, in jail. And so it's like all this stuff that when you're that age, like 10 years old, like how do you even know what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
But his subconscious knows, and he can access it through imagery. And the poem about red things, like all these amazing images, was incredible to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then about experiencing the world, one of my favorite quotes, I can't remember who said this, but I heard it in college, I'd rather be a schizophrenic out for a walk than a neurotic lying on an analyst's couch. Oh my gosh, I'm realizing me right here is not the right form to share.
What the irony is, the analyst will say, go out in nature, befriend the schizophrenic who is in nature. Get out of yourself a little bit here, man. You know, but it's one extreme or the other, examples of where it can be helpful, but then problematic. It's kind of like, I love Cheez-Its and Skittles and pizza, but you know what? How do I eat it? One piece at a time. Sometimes you gotta put it away and go get something else.
Yeah.
I hate that, but you do. And that's what therapy is for.
Yeah.
Therapy is great. For the record, therapy.
So we have to wrap up here, but I wanted to invite you, Nancy, if you'd like to read another one of your poems as a closing to our time together.
Yeah, please.
Okay. Well, this has been such an amazing and fun conversation. I really appreciate being here to be able to talk about these sorts of things. I will close with the first poem in the book, actually, which is called Everyday Apocalypse. The brown tree ring inside the coffee mug will not clean itself. Dish rack, when dirty, needs good lick of a wet sponge. The cat needs to be fed twice a day and taunted by a string of feathers. It's easy to forget I have a body that needs me, a neighborhood that needs me weaving circles through it. Taking out garbage is a reverent task. I scrub the sink, sort the closet, water down the roots of plants it'd be easier to forget about. Sometimes I forget about orangutans swinging their fists at logging machines. Coyotes trot the streets. Possums shine in the night. Hopelessness is not productive, so I imagine watering holes expanding. Return books to their places. Strap on shoes. There have always been leaves falling and children running. The television screen flickers. I wake to harvest rain.
Mm-hmm. Love it!
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Nancy, for being with us. I loved having you on. It's so good to spend time with you and hear about your writing and your process and all the things that you're up to. I'm just really grateful.
Aww.
So thank you for being here with us.
Thank you, Sue. And thank you, Christian.
Yes, thank you.
So fun. Mm-hmm. I love it.
All right, everybody. Tune in next week for
another wild conversation.
Bye.
All right. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
Baby, this is what you came for. Lightning strikes every time she moves. And everybody's watching her, but she's looking at you.